Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
If you touch it in the wrong place, you know, God gets angry.
If you touch it, I'm going to be very angry.
Skidders.
Hello, check 1, 2. Hello, welcome to Weird Tales. Okay, it's fine again. So shall I just get going then?
Yeah, man, just take it away. Like, we haven't done this sort of episode before, so there's no wrong way to do it.
Okay, all right. Hello and welcome to Weird Tales and the Unexplainable. I hope you're okay. Welcome back. If you're a new listener, hello for the first time. Is it obvious I didn't actually have anything to say to new listeners?
Yeah, it's a weird one for him to start on.
So my name's Beef, and hang on a minute. Sorry, that really threw me.
Come on, roll with
it. I've done a tiss. And yeah.
It's all them stories Tiss was telling you, it's throwing you off.
I know, I can't think. I can't think straight. With me as always, my two lovely co-hosts. Say hello, Bobby.
Hello, this is Bob Shoy. I actually forgot what I was going to say then as well, so it's contagious. I had something more to go, but just move on. Just move on. I've lost my thought.
And say hello, Tiss.
Hello, Tiss.
Amazing.
Tiss is the most professional for the first time ever.
I know. Really, really bad. Such a bad start. But never mind. It's fine. You guys okay?
Yeah, we're good. To be fair, we've been chatting for about half an hour.
Did you survive the horrendous heat wave okay?
Did I survive the heat wave? Yes. I was working on a building site, so it was awful.
Oh, my life.
But
I was thinking of you guys working on sites.
Yeah, did you work for it, Tiss?
No, I had the day off. I had Monday and Tuesday off, and then I had the rest of the week off, just booked.
Because of the heat?
No, I booked the Wednesday to Friday because I was going to Scotland.
Outrageous.
To be fair, my employer did ring me up on Tuesday, which was the hottest day on record ever in the UK for American listeners, and said, book in an extra £50 for today. So...
Really?
That's all right. Yeah, he gave me an extra £50 for going in on the hottest day ever.
Seems fair.
Yeah, he said go and buy yourself an ice lolly.
Rachel had a day off school. She skived off school. No, 2 days, last Monday and Tuesday. I was already off.
It was hot.
It was pretty hot. I've spoken to a friend of mine, or a friend of ours, who goes to church with us, she's American, and... she said she couldn't understand it. Like, when she saw the forecast, she was like, oh, that's pretty hot, but, like, I've been in the States where it's been hotter.
Oh, with different measurements?
No. Same. Like, she was like, no, I understand. I was like, no, this is... Like, the weekend before, I was like, no, this is going to be... It'll be horrible. I was like, it'll be really, really horrible. And she was like, oh, well, we'll see. She saw me the next weekend. She went, oh, my gosh. She was like, you weren't kidding. That was insane.
Yeah.
And she said, yeah, she was like, oh, we can have those temperatures because every building is air conditioned. Like, everywhere
you go,
you can
escape it. Yeah, we're not prepared for it in this country. It's not easy. But, you know, cold showers, ice packs, sleeping in the nothing on, and well, I sleep with nothing on anyway, but just a sheet, wrapping up with a duvet and all that shit. It was not on the cards.
But
we survived. Really. We're all right. To the listeners, that's going to feel good. Really old reference. I just realised we're recording all these in advance because I'm going away. So this is, they were like, what heat wave? the one that was ages ago.
The one that was ages ago.
This is the first episode that we're recording as a trio since the 7-year anniversary of Weird Tales. So.
Yeah.
So
yes, that's
happy
right.
7 years.
Well done for picking up on that, Tiss. I had no idea.
I got it in my Instagram from. I don't post that much on my Instagram, so I had it from the 5 year maybe, or the four year. And I saw it and I looked at the date on when I did it and I was like, that's coming up soon.
I can't believe it's been 7 years.
It was weird. The day it was when you messaged me, I was recording with Rick that day. So in a way, I was recording Weird Tales on the day. But yeah. 7 years, we're still going, and we're still shaking things up, because Beef, what are we doing today?
So, today, we're starting a new series. So you guys know that we do series now, so we have 3 or 4 episodes, and then we take a break, and then we come back. So this time, we thought we'd try something a little bit different. We have started a series looking at the artifacts from the Indiana Jones movies. Which is very exciting, and you know, we all like these movies. They're all classics, and so I suppose it gives us an opportunity to rewatch them, which is great. It's a great excuse to rewatch them, and so I'm starting us off, and so in true. I don't know what I was going to say. I really am frazzled from our conversation earlier. I really am. It's really done me in.
And we won't tell the audience what that conversation was, which is even better.
No, I know. But we're starting off with Raiders, because it's the first film in the series. And as listeners may be aware, in the film, Indiana goes after the Ark of the Covenant.
Mm.
And since that is a biblical artifact, it makes sense that the biblical person would dig around. You see what I did there? In this one.
So we originally had this idea way back. I had this in my old. I recovered this in an old notebook when I was going through trying to find old episodes, and we talked about this.
Yes.
When I lived in Stukely, still, we talked about this in the first year of Weird Tales. Like, we could do like Indiana Jones artifacts, and. We thought originally we'd just do an episode about the artifacts of the Indiana Jones films. And then we just forgot about it. And then this year, because this series last year, we did the past, present and future, the skepticism season. We thought, it would be interesting if this time of year, we always do like an interesting, like a spin or a themed series. So this year we dusted off this idea of raiding some tombs with Indy and taking a film each. So it's going to be fun to go through them. The interesting thing is, obviously, because the artifacts in the films are based on real life things, so it has a little bit of history, which we talk about, and it has a lot of mysticism and spirituality, and and they're fun films and everyone's seen them, so it's just something fun that everyone's familiar with.
I was thinking, what we surely need to start by talking about the movie.
I thought what we'd do is, if we, when it's our turn to host, the host says about their history with the series in general. So,
okay.
But obviously, when we're talking about the film in particular, we'll all say about like the film. But Beef, the Indiana Jones series in general, what's your history of it, boy?
I remember watching Raiders when I was probably younger than I should have been.
Yeah. I was watching it the other day and thinking, God, there's stuff in this that would not be in a PG-rated film nowadays.
No. And that's what I can't remember. I can't remember who I was watching it with. I think I was round a friend's house and we'd put it on. Like, we found the video and put the video on. And I seem to remember his mum coming in and like turning it off and like not letting us watch it. And now I look back, I'm absolutely you know, there's quite a few moments in that film that you think, and actually I'll tell you what lulls you into the full sense of security that it's for children is the soundtrack.
Yeah, you got a classic, fun, bombastic, like, John Williams score.
Yeah, jaunty, fun soundtrack, but it's really gory.
Yeah.
At times. Yeah, and then I think I must have been about 12, and I just watched it one Christmas. We just watched all three of them, because this was obviously before Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
I was going to say, there's more than three, boy.
And there's another one next year, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I don't know. I don't remember really loving them, if I'm honest. I remember just watching them on Christmas and quite enjoying them.
Yeah.
You know, but they are classics. They're great films.
I was always like, well, I loved like the Star Wars movies, and then I liked the indie films. But I was always like, yeah, Star Wars number one. If indie's on, I'm going to watch it. But you can't knock Star Wars for me. Yeah,
I think it's also so. It weirdly, Indiana Jones feels like Christmas movies to me because they tend to be on at Christmas.
Because that was your history of it as well. Is when you watched it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I watched it around Christmas, and they tend to be on at Christmas as well. So I don't know. It's just... But Raiders, I think, is the one I've seen the least, probably.
Interesting, because it's like the most sort of iconic one.
Yeah, I think it... I don't know why. I think I must have been about 15 or 16 and just... I remember watching it once and just thinking it was really stupid.
Well, it is quite stupid. Like, you have to get into the stupidity of watching an Indiana Jones film.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's like the people that moaned about Jurassic Park. Yeah. Well, this is stupid. Well, yeah, it's about dinosaurs.
Yeah, if you're not in the mood, you're not going to enjoy it. You have to, like, really be in for something stupid and adventurous and just enjoy it for what it is. Yeah.
You have to be in the mood for a Steven Spielberg movie.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly, of a certain vintage, yeah.
Is it Spielberg?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is, but it's also George Lucas as well.
Lucas wrote it and Spielberg directed it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And Lawrence Kasdan wrote it as well, I think, who did some of the Star Wars stuff with Lucas.
Yeah, it does. At times, it has that kind of Star Wars humour, the Star Wars feel, even the pacing.
It's that punchy Star Wars silly dialogue, like the quippiness between like Han Solo and Leia, but directed by Spielberg. And it's that Kasdan really is the one who does that sort of that dialogue from those original films.
Yeah. What about you guys then?
Raiders, I think the one I've seen the most, weirdly, is Temple of Doom, which is the one the film I'm going to be covering next time.
Mm.
But Raiders and Last Crusade I've seen about the same, and I don't really remember like seeing them for the first time. I just remember like they would be on telly a lot when I was a kid, so I'd watch them on telly a lot. That was all it was. It would be like, I feel like all the time it would be like, oh, we're going to run the Indiana Jones films, like one a week for the next month or whatever, for the next 3 weeks. And it'd be like Saturday night would be Indiana Jones night on TV and I'd watch them when they came on again. And we never had them on VHS or anything growing up because they were just always on telly. So I've just seen them on telly.
Mm.
But what are you, Tiss, with Raiders?
I think I only can remember The Holy Grail.
Right.
And... Raiders, is that the one with the boulder that comes down?
It starts with it.
I think
that's like the opening scene.
It's like the most famous,
very famous scene. It is like the opening.
Even people that haven't seen Indiana Jones have seen that.
I think Raiders is the most quoted. It's also the one most heavily referenced.
Even the thing is with Raiders, I feel like there's one of those moments every like 15, 20 minutes. You're like, oh, it's the big boulder scene. Oh, it's the guy getting chopped up by the aeroplane propeller. Oh, it's the Staff of Ra. It's the pit full of snakes. It's the like every scene. You're like, oh, this is so famous.
I remember, I don't know which series of Family Guy it was, but I feel like it was earlier. I feel like it was 4 or 5. They did. Pretty much every episode had like an Indiana Jones reference.
Simpsons used to reference it all the time as well. There's that episode which starts like the opening with Homer rolling down the stairs. He trips over the stairs and Bart's like running away from him. Yeah. Well, it has the whole thing with Indy weighing up the bag of sand to switch with the idol as well. There's so many famous scenes in this film. And obviously the bit with everyone's face melting is incredibly famous.
Yeah, that's horrific.
It's disgusting. It's still disgusting. When it came on the other night, when I watched it, I was laughing.
It's really horrible. It's really unnecessary.
It's them practical effects. They're so good.
They're so horrible.
Do you remember that bit, Tiss, then, when they open the ark and all the Nazis' faces start melting?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. How can you not remember that?
Marion, don't look at it. Shut your eyes, Marion. Don't look at it, no matter what happens.
That's the shocking thing where I'm like surprised this is a PG.
It can't still be a PG.
I think it is.
Nah, I don't think so.
You wouldn't watch it with Joel?
No. No. No, definitely.
Thing is,
not.
I was such a little wuss kid as well. I used to get scared in Star Wars when he cut off that guy's arm in the cantina.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I found that too, Corey.
Yeah, I kind of wasn't really... I was easily scared with movies when I was a kid. The other bit that I totally forgot about was the guy that gets churned up by an airplane propeller.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, it's really horrible. And it's so like, it's such a like slapstick moment. It's a really violent thing to happen.
Yeah.
And Indy just goes, ugh. It's almost like a Bond movie where Bond just shrugs off like a really awful thing that's happened.
Like where the laser goes up his Jaffa's.
When the laser beam goes up his Jaffa's leg.
Yeah. So it's a good movie. I enjoyed it. I watched it again last night.
I watched it at the weekend.
Yeah, really I enjoyed it much more than I remember enjoying it when I was like younger.
I enjoyed it this time way more than the last time I did a rewatch. Last time I did a rewatch I was a bit cranky and I'm being like, but it's just fun.
It's a good action movie as well. Like I'm getting a bit sick of action movies these days. They're too reliant on CGI and it's too... Like, if I'm honest, I'm really falling out of love with, like, superhero movies because it's too much. There's too much going on. It's too much for me to process all at once and it's all CGI. I quite like that actually, you know, these 80s action movies are quite minimalistic, but you enjoy it.
When I watched this... I've watched this and Temple of Doom already for this series, and watching them again, I'm like, flipping heck, they would not do these stunts practically now. They would not do these sets practically now. I love seeing the big grand sets they make and how they're pulling off these stunts and how they're doing these effects.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Just on a filmmaking level, I'm loving watching them pull this stuff off.
Yeah, it's really... and just even like... when Indy's going after them, and it's like the car scene. It's like not a car chase, but he catches up with them on the horse, and he gets on the truck. And
oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like it's not like a crazy. It's quite minimal. Not a great deal happens, but it's all so close, and it just feels really dramatic. And yeah, I think that's why I get nostalgic and enjoy these films because you don't really get that kind of thing happen in movies these days.
So. Tell us about the real world Ark of the Covenant then, please.
Right, so we're going to get going. So we're going to talk about the Ark of the Covenant. We're going to look at sort of five things really. First of all, we're going to look briefly at what it is, and us kind of within that is the purpose, like what was the Ark of the Covenant built for, like what was it for?
The other thing is, we have to bear in mind that some of our listeners, as mad as this sounds, might not have actually seen the Indiana Jones films.
No.
So we have to really explain these things from the basis level. And it sounds like Tiss has a very faint memory of these early ones.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
I think I know the basic structure of them, but yeah. Every time you guys are talking about scenes, I'm like, yeah, I've seen that scene.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I've got the context of like the storyline. Mm-hmm. I remember there was a kid.
That's number two, yeah. Short
wife, or maybe not his wife. Maybe it was
Indy's,
someone he'd.
Indy has
to wife.
A different woman on every film.
For fuck's sake, he's a player.
Yeah,
yeah, he's Indiana Jones. Yeah,
that sucks.
I was thinking about this. I
not
think
for Indy.
Last week, I was at home working from home last week, and last week there was. An episode of Big Bang Theory, where they one of the things that happens is Sheldon's girlfriend is like she basically pulls out all the flaws in the stuff that he likes, and one of them is Raiders of the Lost Ark, and she's like, yeah, Indiana Jones has no no effect on that movie. Like, if he wasn't in the movie, everything would happen exactly the same.
That's true.
And it, like, completely ruins the movie. He spends the whole episode trying to figure out, like, oh, there must be something he does that is, you know, pulls the plot forward. And she's like, no, nothing. He doesn't do anything. If he wasn't in the movie, it would be the same.
They would still eventually open that arc and melt themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
At the end. But that's his character, though. He's like, he is like a little bit Han Solo-y. He is lucky that he doesn't die. He's like Indiana Jones with an archaeology degree.
You mean Han Solo succeeds, with an archaeology degree?
Yeah, sorry, that's what I mean. Han Solo with an archaeology degree. He is Indiana Jones with an archaeology degree. But he is hapless and lucky more than anything. Has like gift of a gab.
Yeah, they're just good movies. If you haven't seen them, they're worth a watch. Quite how you watch it, though, I'm not sure, because they're not really on any streaming sites, from what I can tell.
Yeah, I have them anywhere at home. I've had them for years.
Just pirate them.
Well, I didn't say I pirated them. I said I had a copy of them.
No, but
I actually have them on DVD.
I'm advocating for our listeners to go and pirate them.
The tables are turning.
Right, talking about piracy, let's talk about Christian stuff.
Can I just say, Tis, do you know what the Ark of the Covenant is?
Go on, give us... Oh, hang on a minute. This is the perfect opportunity for a Tis Bible Stories.
I've got a jingle for this. Yeah, I've got the jingle.
Tell us what it is in your Bible story narration, Tis. Tis is Bible Stories.
I don't know for sure, so I'm just going to riff off the top and say it was this, like, artifact that proves something. Does it prove something, or is it just an object, a holy object?
Well, it could be. So the Ark of the... It's a chest, Tis. It's a chest. What's in it?
Right. Is it like... it's not. That's the Da Vinci Code, isn't it? Where it's proof that Mary was like someone else. Or,
no, it's not that.
I think it's the bones of Jesus.
Oh, I really thought he was going to get it then. No.
Bones of God.
You're not far off by saying it's the bones of God. You're not far off.
God's essence? God's...
Yeah, basically.
Counterpoint on Earth? Is it really? It's like God's like holographic projector.
Well, why don't we pause there? Because I've got I do have a video that sums it up perfectly.
Before we play the video, I just want to say my only knowledge of the Ark of the Covenant comes purely from Indiana Jones. So you might tell me stuff. Well, you will tell me stuff. There's no way that it's 100% accurate. You're going to tell me stuff. I'm going to be like, oh, I just thought it was this because the film told me. But yeah, let's go on. Let's watch this thing.
The Book of Exodus. In the first video, we explored chapters 1 through 18, which tell the foundational story of how God rescued the enslaved Israelites by confronting and defeating Pharaoh, while offering a way of escape through the blood of the Passover lamb. God then delivered his people by bringing them through the waters of the sea and then into the wilderness, where, surprisingly, they grumbled and complained. Now, the second half of the book of Exodus opens as Moses leads Israel to the foot of Mount Sinai, where God invites the nation of Israel to enter into a covenant relationship. And here we reach another key moment in the biblical storyline, because this is picking up and developing God's promise to Abraham. So remember, from the book of Genesis, God promised that through Abraham's family, somehow he would restore his blessing to all of the nations. And here we find out more. God says that if Israel obeys the terms of the covenant, they will be so shaped by God's laws and teaching and justice that they will become a kingdom of priests, which means that they will become God's representatives and show all of the other nations what God is truly like. Now, the people of Israel eagerly accept the offer, and so God's presence appears right on the top of Mount Sinai in the form of cloud and lightning and thunder. And Moses goes up as their representative, and God opens with the basic terms of the covenant, the famous Ten Commandments. These are like the basic terms of the agreement, how the Israelites and God are going to relate to each other. And then after this come another collection of commands which fill out the first 10 in more detail. There are laws about Israel's worship, about social justice, how they are to live together, all shaping Israel into a nation of justice and generosity that's different from the other nations. So Moses writes down all of these laws and he brings them down to the people who, again, eagerly agree to enter into this covenant with God. And once they do so, God takes the relationship forward another step. He tells Moses that he wants his holy and divine and good presence to come and dwell right in the midst of Israel, which develops another aspect of God's covenant promises. So remember, after humanity's rebellion in the garden, it was access to God's presence that was lost. But now it's through the family of Abraham that God's presence is becoming once again accessible through this covenant relationship, and first with Israel, and then somehow one day to all nations. So what follows are 7 chapters of detailed architectural blueprints about this sacred tent called the tabernacle. There's an outer courtyard with an altar, and then in the center there's a tent that has an outer room and then an inner room. And then inside the inner room, which is called the most holy space, is a golden box called the Ark of the Covenant. And there's angelic creatures over the top of it. It's the hot spot of God's presence. Now there's lots of detail in these chapters, and it's important to know that every piece has some kind of symbolic value. All of the flowers, the angels, the gold and the jewels, it all echoes back to the Garden of Eden, the place where God and humans lived together in intimacy. And so the tabernacle is like a portable Eden, so to speak. It's the place where God and Israel can live together in peace, at least in theory, because right here something goes really, really wrong. Israel breaks the covenant. As Moses is up on the mountain receiving the blueprints for the tabernacle, down below at the camp, the Israelites, they're losing patience. And so they ask Moses' brother Aaron to make for them a golden calf idol so they can worship it as the God who saved them out of slavery in Egypt. Now God's presence, it's right there on top of the mountain, they can see it. But here they are below, breaking the first 2 commands of the covenant they just agreed to. No other gods and no idols. Now, what follows is really important. God knows what's happening down below. And so he first invites Moses into his own anger and pain. And he tells Moses what he wants to do, just to wipe Israel out. But Moses intercedes by appealing to God's character. He says, first of all, destroying Israel would be going back on your covenant promises to Abraham. And then Moses appeals to God's reputation among the nations. What would they think if they see you destroying your own people? And so God accepts Moses' intercession, and he relents. And while he does bring his judgment on those who instigated the idolatry, he forgives the nation as a whole and promises to renew his covenant. And it's right here, at this point in the story, that God, for the first time, describes his own character to Moses. He says, "The Lord is merciful, he's gracious, he's slow to anger, abounding in covenant faithfulness. He forgives sin, but he will not leave the wicked unpunished." So we have this tension. God is full of mercy, but also he must deal with evil if he claims to be good. And above all, God is faithful to his promises, even though it means, he knows, he's committing himself to a people who are utterly faithless. And so after renewing the covenant with Israel, God commissions Moses to go ahead and build the tabernacle. And once again, we get 5 long chapters describing in detail the construction of the tabernacle. And it all comes together in the final chapter where the tabernacle's finished. God's glorious divine presence comes and hovers over the tent, and our hopes are high. And so Moses, he goes right up to enter into the tent, and he can't. He actually can't go in. And that's how the book ends.
So that's interesting, because in the film, all they say is it was the chest used to carry the 10 commandments.
Yeah.
So that was my knowledge of it. I didn't realize it had all this extra history behind it. To be honest, when I was a kid, when I watched it, I didn't even realize it was a real thing. I thought they just made it up for the film.
Yeah.
Dr. Jones, now you must understand that this is all strictly confidential. Right?
I understand.
Yesterday afternoon, our European sections intercepted a German communique that was sent from Cairo to Berlin.
Now, you see, over the last 2 years, the Nazis have had teams of archaeologists running around the world looking for all kinds of religious artifacts. Hitler's a nut on the subject. He's crazy. He's obsessed with the occult. And right now, apparently, there's some kind of German archaeological dig going on in the desert outside of Cairo.
Now, we've got some information here, but we can't make anything out of it, and maybe you can. Tanis Development Proceeding. Acquire headpiece, staff of Ra, Abner Ravenwood, U.S.
Nazis have discovered Tanis.
Just what does that mean to you, Tanis?
Well, the city of Tanis is one of the possible resting places of the Lost Ark.
The Lost Ark?
Yeah, the Ark of the Covenant, the chest the Hebrews used to carry around the Ten Commandments.
What do you mean, Ten Commandments? You're talking about the Ten Commandments?
Yes, the actual Ten Commandments, the original stone tablets that Moses brought down out of Mount Horeb and smashed, if you believe in that sort of thing. Did you guys ever go to Sunday school?
Well, look.
The Hebrews took the broken pieces and put them in the Ark. When they settled in Canaan, they put the Ark in a place called the Temple of Solomon.
In Jerusalem.
Where it stayed for many years, until all of a sudden, whoosh, it's gone.
Where?
Well, nobody knows where or when.
However, an Egyptian pharaoh...
Shishak.
Yes, invaded the city of Jerusalem around about 980 BC, and he may have taken the Ark back to the city of Tanis and hidden it in a secret chamber called the Well of Souls.
Secret chamber.
However, about a year after the pharaoh had returned to Egypt, the city of Tanis was consumed by the desert in a sandstorm which lasted a whole year, wiped clean by the wrath of God.
Yeah, I mean, so essentially, in Exodus, it does explain that it was basically used to contain God's presence, but it was also to contain the covenant. So it is... It is said that the Ten Commandments were in there as almost like a sign of the promise that God had made to Israel. So that is what it was, but it was kind of within the tabernacle, and the tabernacle was supposed to be. I quite like the way the video explains it was almost like a portable Eden. It's kind of like recreating what humanity had with God in the Garden of Eden.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
In that video, yeah, and for listeners, there was some small animations running while that video was on, and the link will be in the show notes if you want to watch it. But when he drew the Ark of the Covenant, it looked like it did in the Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah.
Is that because of the Indiana Jones movie, or do people actually know what it looked like and that's what it did look like?
Yeah, if you read Exodus, it does, and I was looking at it earlier. I was like, I can't read it; it's too long. It like the video says, it's seven chapters of really, really detailed description of what it looks like. So this is really interesting, actually. So the prop department used the Bible to get the detail, to get it all right, and then it apparently. So they made two of them, and one of them is like locked away, like ironically locked away, and you can't, you know, is obviously away for movie purposes in some...
In case anyone opens it and unleashes...
Exactly.
The fury of God.
You don't want to open it. The other one just belonged to someone, like someone just bought it after the movie, and it was on the Antiques Roadshow a few weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
Like someone came and was like, oh, I've got this old movie prop... My friends have been telling me it's definitely the Indiana Jones, you know, one, the one from the movie, but I'm not so sure. And like the guy there, and he's like, yeah, this
they
is it.
They actually had it on Antiques Roadshow.
Yeah. It's nuts. Yeah, it's crazy.
What would you keep in it? You had that prop, and I'm guessing it opens because they open it in the film. What do you keep in it if you got that in your house?
I don't know. Would I do something cheesy and put my Bible in it or something like that?
Oh, awful. Tiss, what are you putting in it? It's at the foot of your bed.
I wouldn't want to know what Tiss would put in it.
Yeah, I was going to say.
No comment.
I kind of love the idea of that being used for storing sex toys.
Yeah.
Because then if any guest is nosy enough to open it, their face is going to melt like the Nazis at the end.
Yeah.
They see your box of tricks.
Tiss's sex toy chest.
Nazis melt for sex toys.
No, what would you put in it, Tiz?
He just told us.
Yes, lots of sex toys. Fuck knows. What do I have in my bedroom? Socks. Socks and pants.
Oh, socks and pants is a very good answer, good actually. Or dirty washing.
Skidders.
Just cap that one off. One word.
That's the start of the episode.
Yeah.
Oh my days.
Yeah, it is. Skidders.
Skidders. Brilliant.
So that's brilliant. I like that they did their research on the design and didn't just think, well, it's a combo, I guess, of what's going to look cool for the film. But it has, they want it to feel like a real old artifact in the film that he's going to go hunting after.
Yeah.
So in the film, they said that when they're talking to about it at the beginning of the film, they say, you know, it's the chest used to carry the Ten Commandments, which were broken into pieces and taken to, I can't remember the name of the temple, a temple in Jerusalem. They mentioned the Well of Souls. I mean, is all that gump for the film, or is there a basis in that?
No, that's the film. That's just like film, okay. Gump.
So Well of Souls is not real, no?
No, the Well of Souls isn't something that's real.
And the Staff of Ra?
I think the Staff of Ra is based on Aaron's rod.
Okay.
And
something else that's in Tiss's box.
Yeah, I knew you were going to make a dirty joke.
It's a euphemism. Who's Aaron?
Aaron was Moses' brother.
Oh, right. Go on, Tiss. Sort your Bible stories out.
What was that little noise for? Like, oh, okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Kinky.
Moses' brother's rod. Go on.
No, but also Moses had a staff. He had like a
I bet he did.
I can't say there's right, no word. On. There's no word that I can say that won't
what, is
become
that
a euphemism.
No, there isn't, because I was gonna say rod and that's exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Stick.
Yeah, rod, staff, stick.
He had a stick.
And so the staff that Moses had was what he used to split the Red Sea and...
Oh, right, okay.
He tapped it on a rock to get water to come out for the Israelites to drink. So I think that's what they based the Staff of Ra on, because the Staff of Ra was just, like... I think that was just something, yeah, they added to the film, but it was probably based on...
Well, it's...
Because...
They're in Cairo, aren't they, in the film?
Yeah.
When they go for the temple. And Ra, isn't that an Egyptian thing, Ra?
Don't know. Rachel, is Ra an Egyptian thing?
Yeah, Ra is the sun god.
Ra is the sun god. Hence
yes,
the...
that's what I thought.
Ah, okay, okay.
Which I'm like, which I always found weird, because it's like an Egyptian god and then a Christian box. It's a bit of a weird mixing of things, but I just go with it because it's a fun film.
Oh, hang on, Rachel's saying something. Say it again, sir.
The pharaohs become Ra.
The pharaohs become Ra. Apparently, Ra was the most important sun god. Is that right? Mm-hmm. There we go.
Right. I was right.
You were right. Congratulations.
Thank you.
But yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if that's intentional. I don't know if the movie... like, I don't know if then when they were making it, they were like, oh, well, you know, because it was... So
Moses
the Ten Commandments...
Egyptian.
Huh?
Moses was Egyptian.
Because Moses was Egyptian.
oh, of course. Yeah, okay. It all makes sense.
Yeah. But I think So Aaron's rod was also supposed to have been kept in the Ark of the Covenant as well as the Ten Commandments, apparently.
Right.
So I don't know if that's just a coincidence or if that was just like a cool indie, you know, like plot
yeah,
point for them to have. And
I think they're just digging... different elements to squish them together and be like, well, this will be cool, this will be cool.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I do, you know, so full credit to the movie makers, you know, they did their homework. And, you know, when you watch the movie, it's clearly, you know, they've clearly tried to make it look as close as possible. It looks as well, from what I can make out, it looks as if they even got like the measurements right and everything. Like they, because you can translate the measurements. So I think it was in cubits. It's described in cubits in Exodus, but
never use cubits anymore, do we?
No, you can change
bloody metric system.
You can change it to like feet in inches, I guess. I don't know, but yeah. So that's what it was. And we can see what it looks like. It was made from acacia wood, but you know, covered in gold. You know, the angels over the edge. So there's just two more things that I was that I thought would be important to look at. Because in the movie, at the very beginning, when the like government agents come in and talk to Indy about the Covenant.
Yeah, that's when they say that stuff that I wrote. I said about, you know, where they said, oh, it carried the Ten Commandments, they broke it into pieces, blah, blah, blah. Well of souls, all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, Indy mentions...
You're our man, go and get it.
That's it. That scene, Indy, or I think this is that scene, Indy mentions that, like, it's... Obviously, it's dangerous. You can't open it, you can't... If you touch it in the wrong place, you know, God gets angry. And
is that what they told you at Sunday school?
I took that out of context to my face.
If you
so
touch
quick.
It in the wrong place, God gets angry.
that's basically what they say.
Yeah.
As above, so below, eh?
That's literally what they say.
But out of context, that's going at the start of the episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that is honestly what they say.
Oh, God.
And that lightning comes out and all the rest of it.
Filth.
Oh, my days.
We're talking about the Covenant still.
Mate, you need to sort your social life out, Tiss.
I need to sort my brain out, eh?
Yeah, in the fucking gutter.
Get your mind out of the gutter, it's disgusting.
What's interesting is, so going back to, I know we're talking about it now, but when the agents are talking to Indy and saying, go get this box.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, like I said, had the covenant, the commandments in it. At no point do they say, or maybe I'm remembering wrong, I didn't realise that, but I thought it was just a box with some old bits of stone in it. I wasn't thinking the presence of God's in there.
Yeah.
And I thought that was like a surprise to me when they open it at the end. Because it's like, oh, shit. And they even say, like, it's like a transmitter. They're quote here, they say, it's a transmitter, it's a radio for talking to God.
Oh, well, you must have pulled that quote straight out of the film.
Yeah, that quote, I like that quote.
Yeah.
It's a transmitter, a radio for talking to God. That's what he says later on in the film about it.
Yeah.
Which is when they start introducing, it's not just these stones. There's something, like, you know, spiritual or supernatural inside this, too.
Yeah, so the tabernacle is what kind of contains God's presence. The ark is as the Israelites move around, they kind of carry the ark on the shoulders like they do in the film.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so you know, we talked about the Nazis' faces melting, and you know what happens when you open it, and all the so in that, I think at the beginning, Indy says that like lightning, you know, destroys people and, you know, whatever. I think they would have got that from, that was the question I wanted to answer. Like, did the Ark actually ever hurt anyone? Because, you know, was that a movie thing? Or is that a real thing? Is that...
Shanked someone.
And there is one story, from...
Is it in the Bible?
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
From 2 Samuel... Oh, and also in 1 Chronicles. And it's a guy called Uzzah, who is a Levite. And they're moving the ark from one place to the next. And they kind of don't get their balance right and start to tip the ark. The ark is basically falling off of the...
Oh, they like smack it on the stairs on the way down or something.
Well, so this guy, Uzzah, puts his hand on the ark to try and keep it up.
Right.
And he dies.
Whoa!
Yeah, so it's quite a crazy story.
I imagine it's quite heavy though.
Yeah, I think so. And that's,
it's like trying to move a sofa.
I guess so. It's a bit like having a sofa on your shoulders, I suppose. I don't know how heavy something like that would be.
It looks heavy.
But he basically died on the spot, and it looks
well,
as
just
if
from
it's,
touching it.
Yeah. It's described as it being, you know, God's anger at him, you know, they've been told not to touch it.
And they did, disobeyed.
And he did, disobeyed
but
it.
But the thing, my question there is, would God rather he drop it on the floor?
Well, that was my question.
But this is Old Testament, isn't it? This is angry God.
This is Old Testament angry God.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's a good question to ask. It seems like a drastic thing to happen, doesn't it?
I like it.
For something, you know, he's just trying. He must have been pretty upset. Well, he was dead. He didn't know, but basically,
I like it. I like these stories where it's like old angry god, like, "Oi, I told you not to touch it. You're fucking dead." That's it.
Feed him to the pigs, Errol.
You've made.
Would you rather I dropped it? I didn't say drop it, and I didn't say touch it. Like, whatever you've done, you're fucked.
I love that you've made Old Testament God sound like an East London gangster from Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels.
I don't know why he's turned into
Brick.
He's basically turned into Bricktop.
You should cut down your pork life, mate. Get some exercise.
If you touch it, I'm going to be very angry.
Touch it and you're fucking for it, bruv.
If you touch it, I'm going to feed you to the fucking pigs.
I mean, I only saw that film again about a week ago. It was on TV. And it was just such a ridiculous film. But Bricktop is such a ridiculous character. Now I'm never going to be able to read the Old Testament without thinking about God being Bricktop.
Good.
Brilliant.
I don't even like that film very much. It's just in my head. I can't actually remember what I was going to ask. I've been completely derailed. All right. So God just, the guy touched it and the God said, "Look, I told you, don't touch it."
And it was done. Yeah. It's that was the law. That was one of the laws they'd had given to them. Was basically that was part and parcel of the covenant. They weren't supposed to touch it.
If you touch it, you're a slag.
Yeah, I guess so. We'll move on from that because it's getting very silly, and now I can't stop thinking about God as Bricktop. But the idea is that God's presence was supposed to be such a, to the point where it was almost like a burden, like it was so beyond what humans could comprehend, which is why so at the end of the video it talks about Moses just not being able to enter the tabernacle, that it's, you know, I don't know, it's just, you can't comprehend it. Your physical human body just can't, you cannot even fathom, you know, God's presence, his holiness. It's all to do with that. So I'd imagine that's obviously where they've got it from in Raiders. But there aren't too many other examples. It's not like God went about massacring people and making a habit of, you know, because essentially they were told that was the consequence, and so they just didn't do it.
Right. And after that bloke accidentally died from doing it, they thought, "I'm not going to risk it." Did you, what happened to him?
Yeah, and Moses was like, "Right, we've been told, guys, so let's make sure we're careful, make sure we deal with this properly."
He's told us once, he's told us twice.
I'm paraphrasing, obviously. That's basically it.
So where can you get the blueprint for the tabernacle? Does that still exist?
As in, like, what, to find out, what, if you wanted to make, like, a model for school or something?
No. I want to make a new covenant so God will move into my one, because I would make a better one. And then he'd be in my one, and then we'd be just chilling.
Better than gold?
Well, my shed at the back, it's reinforced concrete top. It's like 4 inches thick, brick walls.
Right.
I fixed the window up. I've got all the spiders out of there. But I just think, could he move? If you made a tabernacle, another tabernacle.
Well, is he still in there?
No, you can't.
He's not trapped in there. It's not like a prison. It's not like a genie in the lamp. But
it's like a little porthole, isn't it? He just pops his head out every now and then.
In the video, he called it a hot spot for God's presence, like a concentration of it. So are we thinking this thing is still out there?
Can he be in every tabernacle at once, or is there just one tabernacle?
Yeah, because God is omnipresent.
Yeah.
He's everywhere all at the same time.
He hasn't got to relocate.
So my shed out the back could house like a big concentration of God.
I think you need to become more holy to achieve that.
I'm holy as fuck.
Not based on them stories you were telling us before we recorded.
No, I know.
That's pretty holy.
I like the mythology that we're creating around this.
God's great.
Man. Yeah, how many emails are we going to get now? Like, "Oh, you need to tell us what Tesla was getting up to."
No. I didn't want to know, so they're not going to know.
No, I'm going to need to psych myself up to hear it. So the answer to your question, Tis, is it wouldn't be necessary We don't. So Christians today don't live under the law of the Old Testament.
I'm sure some do.
Because Jesus, you know, so if we look to the New Testament, Jesus came and fulfilled the law and you know, became, you know, the sacrifice that, because, you know, so you guys know they would often make sacrifices to atone for sins and things like that.
Right.
I think we've talked about that a little bit on the pod over the years. But so because, so and so you can't contain God's presence. It's not like something that can be contained to one spot.
That feels quite like heretical to say, like, we're going to try and contain God's presence. That doesn't seem very religious to me.
Yeah, it's almost as if the tabernacle was like, God was like, well, I was, you know, since you guys screwed up
right
in the Garden of Eden, let's try and have something almost like a midway point. Like, I still want to be with you. I still want to, you know.
We're going to try and rebuild. We'll start seeing each other every other weekend.
Yeah.
Just test the waters a little bit. It's like a portable church, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I suppose in modern terms, it's, you know, essentially what they were doing was...
Yeah, you would go to the church.
Was building the church. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, and you would say... A holy person would say surely that a church itself would contain the presence of God. It's why you would go there to commune and worship and all that stuff. So,
yeah,
in a way,
you could go down your shed, Tis, and make a new ark, but it would be a bit fruitless.
I've got an uncle who built a church at the bottom of his garden. He was on the telly for it.
Really?
It's I don't know if it's like the smallest church in the country or something, the smallest chapel. It's something. I don't know. I missed it when it was on telly. I'll see if I can dig it out, Pete.
Yeah, that's bizarre. You've never told me that before.
I know. I can't believe I never told you that.
Why? Okay. What did he make the church for?
He is a vicar, to be fair.
Oh, okay. What, your uncle?
Yeah, I've got an uncle that's a vicar.
You've got an uncle, he's a vicar, I never knew that.
it's my mum's side of the family, I never talk about them.
Oh, okay. Is that because they build churches in their garden?
Anyway, yeah. I'll find your video and
please do. YouTube somewhere. Please do.
When you think of a cathedral, you may not have a garden shed in mind. The Priory Chapel and Cathedral Church of Our Lady Beaulieu is hidden in a Portsmouth back garden. It was brought to life by Father Julian Kent.
Well, when we moved here, this is our sixth year here, it had been a laundry. Nobody actually uses these sheds for anything other than what they're not meant for. And one of the remits when I was looking for this house is that it had a space large enough to be a chapel. I spent many nights down there, and I worked on it solidly until I had finished. We are an independent Catholic denomination, the Ecumenical Catholic Church UK, and actually our parish priest was elected bishop last year, and so he needed somewhere to park his throne, and that is what defines a cathedral, the presence, not the size of the building, but the presence of a bishop's throne, which is actually called a cathedra.
Although he can't be entirely sure, Father Julian says that this might be the world's smallest fully functioning cathedral, and many of the items in here were found in charity shops or on flea markets.
I found, when I was browsing through a flea market in France once, a nice statue of St. Bernard. So I then set about looking for a similar statue of St. Benedict, because they're mounted either side of the altar. St. Benedict is not of the same quality, but is similar enough to be a match. I found a statue of St. James, a beautifully hand-carved wooden statue and hand-painted of St. James, in a Salvation Army shop.
Father Julian is especially proud of the newly built part of the chapel that he made. He calls it the organ chamber, but it's also the colours of the place that stand out.
I think the overall effect when you go through it is one of a burst of colour. that certainly our medieval churches would have been before they were all whitewashed. Now, I don't have frescoes on the wall, but I do have a lot of colour, and that's the effect I wanted to achieve.
The unique place has now been nominated for an award as Shed of the Year.
A member of my congregation wrote to Shed of the Year and suggested that he said that Father Julian's shed should win Shed of the Year because he has turned it into the world's smallest cathedral. Now, I don't know if that is true, as I said, but it certainly must be up there amongst the smallest. So they got in touch with me, and the next thing I knew, there were film crew all over the garden and in the chapel and interviewing me for Shed of the Year. And so it's all very exciting and all very happened very quickly. And it's been fun to enter it. I don't really mind if I don't win it. But it would be, you know, I do encourage my friends to vote. So I must be slightly interested.
Visiting maybe the smallest cathedral in the world is only possible by invitation, which can be received by Facebook. Nicole Ries, For That's TV.
Okay, so the final thing that I thought would be good to look at, which is pretty much the whole point of Raiders, is where is it? Where is the Ark?
Right.
It is a mystery.
It's in the Well of Souls.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, if they watch the movie, they'll know exactly where it is. Well, they won't now because it's in a warehouse being looked after by top men, isn't it?
Top men.
Where is the Ark? I thought we'd settled that. The Ark is somewhere very safe.
From whom?
The Ark is a source of unspeakable power, and it has to be researched.
And it will be, I assure you, Dr. Brody, Dr. Jones. We have top men working on it right now.
Who?
Top men.
It's in the warehouse for top men.
Aisle 19. It's like when you go to IKEA. Aisle 19.
It's in the warehouse outlet for top men.
Location 34. Shelf 12. At the back. It's at the back.
Do they have top men in America? Is that a joke that's beyond anything? There's a high street. What? There's a men's clothes shop called Top Men in the UK. Anyway.
Yeah, that's top man.
Yeah, I know. I didn't say it was good. It's tenuous.
It's being looked after by top man.
It's being Who? Kept in top man.
Top man.
Where?
Is it still a thing? I thought they closed all their shops.
Maybe. Maybe. Okay. I don't know. I don't think there's one here.
No, we have one in Aylesbury. I don't know if it's still around. Aylesbury's not really a top man sort of place. This is what I keep saying to Rachel. Like they keep making these silly shops in Aylesbury, and they just need a Primark in Aylesbury. We don't need.
Can't you have variety?
No, I don't think so. The top man's just
no.
not.
No.
Top man. I don't know. I don't think it's very popular in Aylesbury. I think Primark would be much more popular. Having said that, I don't really like Primark either. So.
Sorry, where did you say it was? Top man.
Yeah.
That's so stupid.
It just finishes with someone pushing it on a trolley into the shop.
It's so stupid.
Oh, man.
In between all the racks of like jeans and boxer shorts, it's the Ark of Covenant.
Yeah. I think that's also... It's quite an anticlimactic end to the whole film, isn't it?
I think it's just a point of like, you know, this is just one artifact, and actually there's it just in amongst slipped. Thousands. There's thousands of them. We keep them all somewhere.
Yeah.
Isn't that warehouse? I might be wrong. It's been a long time since I watched number 4. I know that the number 4 opens with a scene at the warehouse. You go to the warehouse in number 4. And I swear I might be wrong. I thought. My memory of it is that there was Area 51. That's what the warehouse was. It was Area 51.
Oh, really?
But I might have just completely mixed up in my head. I'm going to rewatch number 4 soon for preparation. So, I'll remember. So where is it? Bee's going to tell us where the ark is. It's not in Top Men.
Lots of speculation about where it is, apparently. So one of the first claims is that basically it can be found in Ethiopia, where it was moved. It's been moved. It seems to have been moved around so much.
According to who?
According to the Bible, it was moved around a lot. So it was.
That shut me up. That shut me up, didn't it?
Why is that so funny?
Boom. Roasted, Bob. Is that according to beef? According to the Bible?
No, just...
Sorry, who are your sources on this? It's the Word of God.
Yeah, the Bible.
Just God, mate, so...
Because...
Top secrets.
Basically, the point of the Ark was that it could be moved around. So that was the whole point, was that God's presence wasn't contained to one place.
They should have put some wheels on it.
Yeah. I don't know that they had... Yeah,
they should have put two wheels on the bottom so you could drag it like one of them suitcases.
They should just put it in a suitcase. Yeah, exactly. Why didn't they think of that? And basically it was just always on the move. Another claim is that it was hidden in some passages underneath the first temple in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
And that the Babylonians came in and destroyed it in 586 BC. But you can't test that at all. So what does the Bible say?
It's a long way from Egypt, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
On foot.
Yeah, it is, yeah. But it looks like if you look at Book of 2 Chronicles in the Old Testament, it looks, and this is the last time the Ark is mentioned, as far as I can tell, is that it seems to have been buried underneath the temple of King Solomon.
Right.
So, but then it was essentially destroyed.
That's in Jerusalem, isn't it?
When Jerusalem was destroyed by King Nebuchadnezzar.
They mention that in the film, the Temple of Solomon.
Yes.
He says, broken into pieces and taken to the Temple of Solomon in Jerusalem. So they're going by that logic in the film, and then they say, later move to the Well of Souls or whatever.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So
they're going on that it was at the Temple of Solomon.
Yeah.
Ah, okay, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, so again, so they've obviously done a bit of homework there. But that's the last time it's mentioned in the Bible, and eventually then destroyed by King Nebuchadnezzar when Jerusalem was like completely flattened, and that would have just been a part of that. So it looks as if it wasn't relocated in 1936. But I like that. I like that the movie doesn't like it obviously it's a film, so it makes up some gumph. But then other parts of it it's pulled straight from the story anyway, so
yeah, it does what it can to like tie it into, you know, credible writings.
Yeah. Yeah, just to stop the Christians from being that upset, I suppose.
One thing I was gonna ask, do you know if the Nazis ever actually went looking for it?
That I don't know. It strangely didn't even cross my mind to even think about it.
No, I just thought of it now. I was like, what's the other big thing about Raiders? Oh, it's full of Nazis. Because I know, I was actually talking about it with Rick on the episode we just recorded that will be up before this.
Mm-hmm.
We were just talking about how the Nazis went looking for stuff. Hitler was very interested in the occult. He was very interested. He was very spiritual, interested in spirituality. And he had like secret divisions who would go looking for this, that, and the other. So it's totally feasible that he might have said, go look for the Ark of the Covenant. I want the power of God.
The Nazis did love an artifact.
Yeah.
Good God.
Yes, that's just what the Hebrews thought.
Now what's that supposed to be coming out of there?
Lightning. Fire. Power of God or something.
Beginning to understand Hitler's interest in this.
Oh, yes. The Bible speaks of the Ark leveling mountains and laying waste to entire regions. An army which carries the Ark before it is invincible.
Rachel.
Hello.
Did the Nazis ever look for the Ark of the Covenant, like in Raiders?
Not that I know of, but they did steal things from countries.
Yeah.
But they also
Hitler wanted as much power as possible.
But they also destroyed a lot of stuff that didn't mix. So I'm not sure that they...
I never knew that. I never knew Hitler wanted power.
He always seemed so placid.
He was a vegan, wasn't he?
Vegetarian, mate.
All right.
Not the same.
Ideologically, why would they want a Jewish... Why would they want a Jewish artifact?
Yeah, that's a good point.
But I don't know if that's...
No, that's a good point. Rachel's just drawn my attention to something which also is also mentioned in the movie.
Oh, right.
So basically, the answer is she doesn't really know that the Nazis looked for so much.
But more they could have. It is something that you could imagine they would have done, though. I swear that Hitler sent them looking for Bigfoot, for fuck's sake, at one point.
Probably. Can you imagine being the Sasquatch Nazi crew?
Yeah. I mean, part of you would be like, really? Well, at least we're out of Germany at the moment. At least, but also, this is a fool's errand, isn't it? Is he going to chop my head off when I don't come back with a giant ape?
Exactly. But then a part of me, I suppose there might have been someone saying, well, at least we're not murdering Jews, so...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, every cloud. Rachel just made a good point. She said, why would Hitler be interested in a Jewish artifact?
Oh, that is a good point. Which is,
they say that in the movie. Like, I can't remember where, I'm sure at some point.
Yeah, there is something that is said about that.
I think actually one of the Nazis says it. Like,
yeah, he does.
Hitler's interested in anything that would give him more power, though.
Yeah, but would Hitler want something even if it was Jewish, but it was still going to give him power?
He might see it as taking their power from them.
Yeah, he doesn't see it as like they're not telling the truth. He just hates them. He wants, if they have got like this artifact, definitely he wants that to destroy it or wield it.
He might have, yeah, I was going to say, he might destroy it like in front of them.
Oh, yeah, that's another option.
I don't know, like a bully at school treading on someone's artwork.
I'm destroying your god. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, nasty Nazis.
He was a bad bugger.
He was, yeah. But I'm sure they say that. Yeah, it is the Nazi, like the main guy
It's when they pull up with it from the submarine.
That's it.
When Hitler sews away on the submarine.
When Hitliana Jones, yeah.
Yeah, when Hitliana Jones stays on the submarine, when he gets off, that's when they're moving the ark, then one of the Nazis says it then. He says, like, you know, he says about it being a Jewish artifact.
Yeah, why are you bringing that on here?
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what they would stand to gain from it. I suppose, would they realistically, they probably sit there and think, God's probably not on our side, actually. I don't think the Jewish God is going to be too happy, and I don't think he's going to give us much more power than we've already got.
Do they not think, yeah, but the Nazis were so egomaniacal, there we go, I got the word out.
Yeah.
They probably thought, no, God knows we're doing the right thing here.
Maybe they did, I suppose so. I suppose you'd have to lie to yourself, wouldn't you?
When you've gone as far as they have, you have to convince yourself you're doing the right thing. I think otherwise you're going to say.
Yeah, they've committed. If there's one word you can apply to that, is commitment. They have totally committed to that. You can't, there's no going back.
Yeah, and they totally committed many fucking crimes as well.
You may as well. There's no going back.
Yeah.
You know.
What a rotten time.
Anyway, so essentially, it looks like most archaeologists, most biblical scholars would conclude that it's like it would never be found anyway, but it looks as if it was just destroyed.
Yeah.
And if it was moved around so much, like, where would you even begin?
If it hasn't been destroyed,
yeah,
one, if you believe it's real, two, if it hasn't been destroyed, three, it's probably just buried under the ground somewhere, and likelihood of ever
in Jerusalem
finding it is impossible. Yeah, like maybe in Jerusalem, maybe still in Egypt, maybe, I don't know, where one of the places you said, Ethiopia or whatever. It could be anywhere.
Yeah.
So
you either waste your time trying to find it, or you go by the biblical account, which tells you it looks like it was destroyed. So
mm-hmm. Right.
I'd do that one, which is a bit anticlimactic, but... is probably also not in a warehouse somewhere in a box.
Oh, no.
I don't know. It might be. You know, I'm not sure.
Maybe.
I'm not sure.
I don't think it is, but...
No, I don't think so. But that takes me full circle. That takes me right through all the information that I wanted to draw on, really.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about it.
Yeah, good fun.
But that's the Ark of the Covenant. Not to be confused with Noah's Ark.
No, that was always confused me, because when I hear biblical artifact and ark, I think boat.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not the boat.
No. When I was younger, I was always like, why are they calling this box an ark? It was confusing to young me.
Well, that's true. Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. Hmm. I don't know. I don't know what the word ark means, though. It's not...
It just must be an old word, like a meaning of that word that isn't used anymore. It just always sounded weird to me.
We're going to get an email. We're going to get some listener coming in with some details there.
We say nonsense all the time on this show.
Yeah. Most of the time is nonsense, yeah.
You know, we've done over 180 episodes of this. If they're still going to nitpick the nonsense that we say, it's way too late. That ship has sailed. That ark has sailed.
Yes, that's the Ark of the Covenant. Did that kind of cover all the questions that you guys had?
That was great. I loved it.
Good.
Mm.
Glad to hear it. Tiss is still munching on something.
Tiss is munching. I liked actually you uncovering how much care it actually did seem to take with the film in terms of the depiction, in terms of mentioning, you know, the Temple of Solomon, all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big fun adventure film. They didn't have to sort of tie all that stuff in.
But no, I guess
it's
not.
It's better for it. It's richer for it.
Is Spielberg Jewish?
Yes.
Well, and that, I suppose.
And actually, his cartoony depiction of Nazis in this film and the other indie films, Last Crusade is the other one the Nazis in, isn't it? So the sort of cartooniness, he said he kind of regretted in a way. He said he felt, I'm paraphrasing this, is something I read fucking years ago. But he kind of regretted how he kind of made Nazis into sort of jokey villains a little bit in the 80s. With some of like portraying them as he did, and which is what led him to eventually do Schindler's List. I actually want people to understand that these people are fucking really scary psychopaths, actually. And I want to not do cartoonish Nazis anymore. I want to do a really heavy, real portrayal of what Nazis were like at that time. And that was kind of, what led to Schindler's List, which, great film.
That's interesting. I did not know that. That's interesting.
And very different from Indiana Jones.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, it's a very different film, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. I didn't realise that at all. Yeah. But it suddenly came to me. I was like, oh, hang on a minute.
Like I say, I'm paraphrasing that. I just remember him saying something like that.
Yeah. But no, they did. They did do their homework with it. They didn't, you know, obviously some of it is just artistic license, but...
It adds a lot of credibility to the fact that it's about an archaeologist and it has real sort of world artifacts and knowledge and things like that, because it makes it more believable. It makes it seem like Indy knows his stuff a little bit more.
Yeah, exactly. I know you're going to reference this later, but the video, by the way, if you go on YouTube, type in Bible Project. I've used one or two of their videos in my episodes before, but they're great. Really great guys. The animation, I find the animation really helpful when you're listening to it, and it just kind of helps paint the picture of lots of, you know, goes. I think they've done one for every book of the Bible, but they've done them for different themes, different characters. So yeah, you can find that. That's Exodus, the second part of Exodus, on Bible Projects on YouTube.
Well, I'll put a link to that particular video in the show notes, but yeah, there's plenty more on their channel.
Amazing. There we go.
Right, thanks, Beefy.
Thanks, Beef.
You're welcome. Thanks for listening.
It sounded like I was going to say something else after. It's like, thanks, Beef.
Yeah, really, it was like I edited you, like I cut you off.
Yeah.
So next time I'm going to be talking about, I feel like I've got the hardest one, because mine's a little bit more wishy-washy. It's not a particular... artifact. It's a bit more based on bits and bobs. It's not one particular thing. So I'm going to be talking about the Shankara stones from the Temple of Doom. So I end up with this. We sort of all claimed our ones right at the beginning. Tiss jumped straight on Holy Grail because that's his fondest memories of Last Crusade. Beef went for Ark of the Covenant, was the biblical connection. And then that left me with Temple of Doom. So I've got the difficult one. And obviously we are going to be tackling Crystal Skulls right at the end.
Yeah, Rick's probably got the hardest one of all.
He said only because he's got to rewatch Crystal Skull.
Yeah. Did we go and see that together? I feel like me and you went to see that.
No, but... I saw it. You, unbelievably, I saw it at the cinema with my ex-girlfriend. But do you know who was sat in front of us in the cinema?
No.
Chris O'Dowd from the IT Crowd.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Is he well O'Dowd?
Oh, my days. Oh,
God.
Get your mind out of the gutter, you're filthy.
I don't
filthy.
Know. We were watching what Indiana Jones. With you? Like we're friends. Yeah, we were just watching Indiana Jones together, man.
Okay. What were you... What, in Milton Keynes? Or...
I didn't say anything to him. I just... No. I was in Weymouth of all places.
Oh, right. Yeah, what are you going to say to him? Like, if you bump into him in the street, you could maybe say something, but in a cinema...
You should have nudged him and said, "Oi, have they tried turning it off and on again?"
I wasn't sure it was him during the film. I was like, "Oh, I think that's... I don't know." And then afterwards, I heard him talking, a very distinct voice, obviously. Heard him talking in the hallway, and I was like, "Oh, it was him." But I didn't say anything.
Interesting.
He was talking about the fridge scene, about, you know, I think we've all learned something. You can survive a... I mean, that's what I remember him saying. I think we've all learned something. You can survive a nuclear bomb by hiding in a fridge. That scene. So maybe Rick will tell us if he really can do that.
Oh, don't keep us waiting, Rick. Please tell us the answer.
I hope he hears this before. He won't, because these are all being put on the back shelf. These are all in advance. I don't think he's going to hear it for a record of him. Right, anyway, so thanks, Beef. Listeners, if you want to moan at us about things we got wrong or get in contact or say you actually like this show or anything, it's WTATUpod@gmail.com or go to our website, WeirdTalesAndTheUnexplainable.com, where you can contact directly through there. You can find links to buy merchandise. You can find links to donate monetarily. I'm the only one still on Twitter. I'm holding the fort there. These guys...
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Out first, so I have to stay there to make sure we have some sort of presence. But you can find me there and talk to me directly on Twitter at Bob Shoy. That's at BOBSHOY. We're also on Facebook, and we have really lovely messages from people on Facebook all the time. So thanks everyone for that. People really enjoyed the episodes we did last series, so thanks everyone. I'm glad you enjoyed them. And one thing I always forget to say is, tell your friends. The best ways for podcasts to grow or get new listeners is word of mouth. It works for me. If my friend tells me this show is good, I check it out more than someone I don't know saying it. So if you know a friend who might like one of our episodes, suggest one to them or suggest a couple. And you can always leave ratings and reviews. No one ever does that anymore because no one uses like iTunes for things, but that's the only place it matters. But if you do, if you're one of the last people, go and give a rating and review. It's been a while since we had one. That's everything. Thank you.
Are we on Spotify? Is it only Spotify really that people use now?
I don't know. Yeah, people have all their own apps. People use like Podbean and Podchaser. There's so many different podcast apps. I don't know where people listen to it from. So it's all just sourced from Acast on my end, but that uploads to everywhere. So yeah, it is on Spotify. Yeah.
Sorry, carry on.
That's it. I'm done. So that's it. Any final thoughts from anyone? We were just sort of beat it out.
No, I was just, yeah. No, I haven't got any final thoughts. I dare to ask Tiss if he's got any.
I got no final thoughts.
Okay, well, until next time. Do you have a good quote from the film or something? Sort of sprung that on you a little bit.
Dunno. Until next time. I've got a good one. Oh, go on.
Well, I was just going to replace the word radio podcast and be clever. Until we're time. So until next time. You've been listening to Weird Tales. It's a transmitter. It's a podcast for talking to God.
That was better than what I was going to do.
What are you going to do?
Until next time, archaeology you later.
That's really bad. That's really bad.
Well, what's worse, that or archaeology you later?
Does Indiana Jones doesn't really have a catchphrase, does he?
No, that's the only thing it's missing, isn't it?
Closest thing, he does say it belongs in a museum.
I'd say his most famous one is like... when the person says, "I love you," and he's like, "I know." At the end of the covenant, when he gets frozen in carbonite.
See you later, everyone.
Gets frozen in Nazi cement.
Sorry, where did you say it was? Top Man.